This is my second year hosting this opening hour of the fall edition of the Penguin Playbook radio show, so I've been able to get to know a lot of our head coach as well, but the fans, the loyal listeners, year in, year out, they hear from our head coaches and they're familiar with them. Well, this is a really cool aspect where this is your first year as the head coach here at Youngstown State with our women's soccer program. So I just want to ask you, you know, when you got on campus or when you start any season, are there any specific values or team goals that you present to the players that maybe not on the field, but things that you want them to do off the field that will make them successful in life?
Sure. So I think we went through the spring semester kind of feeling out process, getting to know each other a little bit, as well as kind of onboarding the rest of the staff that we were hiring. And so it was great because the first month it was pretty much just me. And so there was really no avoiding me, whether it was practice, in the office, anything. Yeah. I was the person that they had to go to, which was awesome. You know, and then I think over time you get to know the players and the personalities of the team. It's a really great group of women. And so for me, it was just awesome to connect with them on that level. You know, as far as core values, you know, we're looking at like growth, resilience, integrity, tenacity. You know, I think it's 2025 and there's a lot of opportunity out there for women. And, you know, I think people that attack their college career academically and athletically with those core values, I think tend to be very successful in the real world postgraduate. But then also hopefully long term, we start to see those core values more and more on the field in recruiting and into the future.
So let's take a step back. Let's learn about the history of Rich Wall as a player and then starting off as a head coach. So you grew up in North Carolina, correct? Attended Wingate University and then transferred to Gardner-Webb. You had a long college soccer career, appeared in 70 matches over your four seasons. If we go back even deeper than that, what was it about the sport of soccer that made you fall in love with it as a kid and it has led you basically your entire life now?
Loaded question, because it probably wasn't the best sport that I played, but being 5'6", it was the only option I really had. So I love all sports, to be completely honest, and soccer was probably the one that I just gravitated to the most. It was a lower level, like second or third division pro team in Charlotte that was winning national championships annually, and so being around that was probably a big factor for that, for sure. I'd say just the environment I was raised in, I was always going to be an athlete, and soccer is what I picked.
And so since you cracked the door open a little bit, what were some of the other sports that you played growing up?
Basketball was probably the one where if I was home alone or whatever, basketball is what I was doing.
Okay.
Enjoyed playing football, baseball as well.
So you talk about how you were around many sports growing up. You played many sports. You got to see many different aspects. Was coaching always a dream of yours growing up? You're around all these different sports, you're around so many different coaches, I'm sure. Was coaching always a dream of yours?
Being involved in higher level athletics was always part of the vision. I would say coaching became a reality probably during college at some point, probably going into junior year. I knew that's what I wanted to do. You know, I had some great influences. Both my parents coached. My mom was my primary basketball coach for many, many years. She actually played college basketball as well. And so, you know, some of her, you know, greatest influences were coaches that she had as well. So probably just pretty natural to go that route.
And so I mentioned you appeared in 70 matches during your collegiate career, and most of it spent at Gardner-Webb. Before we move on to the coaching, just what were some of your fondest memories of your playing days, whether it's in college or beforehand, that are things that have stuck with you for your entire life?
For sure. So when I transferred to Gardner-Webb, our season opener was at Clemson.
Okay.
You know, so first game, Division I, sophomore year opening day, there was a lot of cool things about that. But I also got the game-winning assist, so
okay.
It was our program's first win over an ACC opponent in program history. And so that was kind of a tone setter. You know, we then actually in all 4 years, you know, the team I was on lost to the eventual conference champion in the conference tournament. So that isn't a fond memory, but, you know, to know that you were that close, you know, it was two conference championship games, a conference semifinal, and a penalty kick shootout loss to the eventual champion in the quarterfinals 1 year. So we were successful. We just never got over the hump, unfortunately. But I think that kind of just built that drive and desire to want to win and be successful.
So successful is a great word because that'll kind of bridge us right into your coaching career. So you had your first head coaching job at the college ranks at Division II Lees McRae College from 2015 to 2018. Multiple double-digit win seasons. You had the program as a nationally ranked team across the country. What was that initial experience like for you during that first head coaching job at the college ranks? I'm sure your head was spinning a little bit at but yeah. a lot of memories that you're able to look back at.
Yeah. So, you know, I was hired as a head coach at 25. And so you think you know everything, of course, but you don't. So a lot of trial and error, to say the least. And fortunately, you know, I think people make the experience. And so we had a great administration for the limited resources that we had. And you know, the fact that they believed in me was pretty special. And I think the team just kind of gravitated toward each other. We didn't have, you know, American football there. So we were kind of the fall sport. It was us and women's volleyball and women's soccer. So we were kind of like the headline sport. We had been to a national championship in the 2000s. So we just kind of had the history of the school. And there was a lot of responsibility with that too, which was kind of ironic as a soccer coach, right?
Yeah.
You know, our athletic director would come up and say, you know, however well men's soccer does is how well the department's going to do this year. If you guys have a really great year, you're going to set the tone for everybody. You know, and so in that third year, 2017, we set all types of records and did really, really well. And it was a special time for sure. And some really fond memories too.
So it's kind of funny you say not many people get a head coaching job at the age of 25, and you said you go into it thinking you know everything, but there's a lot of things that you have to learn. What were some of those first kind of core coaching qualities that you learned at an early part of your career that you still look back at as very beneficial, and you use that as a base as you continue here in your coaching career?
So I think every school is very different, right?
Okay.
And so Lees McRae was, for lack of a better word, it was an underfunded program and department across the board. And so you had to wear a lot of hats. And so that experience, I think, has just gone with me because it wasn't just about X's and O's. It wasn't just about recruiting or, you know, trying to stretch the dollar, you know, and there's no $5 footlongs anymore for postgame.
Yeah.
So it's a little tougher nowadays.
Uh-huh.
But because you kind of played that budget game, because you always had to do everything, you know, we didn't have maintenance people. So we put up the corner flags. We put nets on the goals. We mowed the lawn, you know.
Yeah.
I call it a lawn because it was not a field.
Yeah.
And so, like, we had two practice fields and a game field. And oftentimes you get there at 9 a.m. and be like, this just needs to be done. So you would go out there and you'd mow all three fields. And, you know, you got a nice farmer's tan going by 1 o'clock. And, you know, and then it's like, all right, I can't even eat lunch. I have to plan practice or watch film and scout. So there was a lot of things. You just had to wear a lot of different hats. And, you know, those 4 years in particular were invaluable. But even 1 year earlier than that, when I was the assistant at Brevard in 2014, the women's coach is now the assistant at Southern Cal.
Okay.
And I would say I learned a lot from him just watching him on the day-to-day because at Brevard, he was the guy that would mow the fields, line the fields, all that kind of stuff. And so then when I got to Lees McRae, it was kind of like this pride part where I was like, all right, nobody's too big to do this job. And so now when you go to places like Youngstown State where you have facilities staff, academic staff, like it's just more complete. So you already know the ins and outs and what needs to happen. But now you have professionals that are doing those tasks for you and for your program. And so, the totality, though, of those opportunities at Brevard and Lees McRae definitely helped.
You know, it's so interesting that you bring up the fact that you had to wear so many different hats as a head coach at Lees McRae, because last week we had the Youngstown State bowling program on the show, and their head coach, Doug Kaberski, when he was the head coach at a Division II school before coming to Youngstown State, he had to control the team's social media accounts. He had to talk. He had to deal with the team budget. He had to do travel. He had to do all these things. And I was going to ask you, you know, does it make you more appreciative when you get to a Division I school and you have these other people working in these areas that you don't have to control? But you answered the question right for
100%. It makes it easier, but also I think it – you know, one thing that I've learned is like what's important now, right? And so it allows the head coach to maybe prioritize a little bit better. Not that the fields don't need to be mowed, because they do, but now you have more time to do other things. So if you have other people that can do a task for you or can specialize in a certain area, it allows the head coach to focus more on what's important now. And when you're in season, that's pretty much priority.
Yeah, definitely. And you got your first kind of taste of Division I coaching as an assistant in the late 2010s, Ball State for a year. You were at the University of Cincinnati for 2 years. Went to Coastal Carolina where you were the associate head coach. I guess this is kind of going along the same lines of what we've already been talking about. But from your standpoint, I guess from a coaching standpoint, are there many big differences that you see from the Division I to the Division II level when coaching? Or at the end of the day, is it all just kind of soccer and you look at the X's and O's the same way?
The soccer is more or less soccer, right? Because, you know, men's, women's, Division I, Division II, it's the same size ball. It's 11v11.
Yep.
It's the same size fields. You know, each place has its own nuance, right, for home field advantage. Some are turf, some are grass, some, you know, don't have much grass. Yeah. And, you know, so you deal with that kind of stuff. But, no, I think the biggest differences are genuinely in your resources. You know, support staff is obviously a big factor there. Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest, and then recruiting, right? I think it's a much higher level of recruiting, and the speed of play is faster.
So we talk about your start as the head coach at Lees McRae, and then you make the jump up to Division I as an assistant. Now we go to 2023. You get back into the head coaching ranks at a then Division II school in Mercyhurst, who was then competing in the Pennsylvania State Athletic Conference. And this is a program that had seen success before you'd gotten there. It's this program that had established that they can win games, they can win matches. Right away, though, your first year, 16-4-1, you make it to the Division II national tournament in 2023. What was the recipe for success for you kind of right out of the gate at Mercyhurst?
You know, having had the 4 years at Lees McRae, you know, and then 4 years removed from being a head coach, you learn a lot. I had three different, you know, bosses, so to speak, right, head coaches that I worked under and learned from each and every one of them. Good, bad, and different, right? And maybe how to be efficient, how to, you know, prioritize what's important now. Prioritize how do you win games, you know, and those types of things. As you mentioned, there was a great foundation there that was already there, but, you know, we're still talking. They were 10-6-4, 10-4-6 the year before, right? And
there's still a jump.
Still a big jump, right? Yeah, I mean, it was just a fun record-setting type of year. We did really well together, and I think part of that was just from day one clicking with the team, and they probably needed me as much as I needed them.
Yeah. So, and I'm not sure what the logistics were behind the scenes, but so you come to Mercyhurst, you have this amazing first season, and then boom, you're Division I school the next year. Mercyhurst makes the jump from the PSAC up to the NEC, and you help lead that transition in your second year at the helm. What was that experience like for you to lead a program at a level that they have never played at before?
Well, one, they had never played at it before, right? And so it was a crash course, similar to what we did this year with the non-conference schedule here. But, you know, I think the biggest thing for me was, okay, hey, I've experienced this as an assistant coach. I know what the level is. We need to get them up to speed as fast as possible and kind of, you know, just rip that Band-Aid off. We had a three-month runway from the time, hey, we're going D1 to we're playing D1 games. Women's soccer is the earliest sport on the athletic calendar for competition. So we had a five-day preseason, one preseason game, and then we were playing Duquesne opening day. And so it was a whirlwind, to say the least. But I think the fun part for me was just allowing those girls to experience something they had never thought they would, right? And nobody picked Mercyhurst because they were going D1. Mm-hmm. Now, part of my, you know, process in choosing Mercyhurst initially was it was discussed in my interview that, like, hey, this is a possibility. You know, it's going to be Lemoyne or us, right? And then Lemoyne goes. So you're like, oh, there's some validity there. And then our athletic director left and was like, all right, that's probably gone. But true to his word, it was Lemoyne and then it was us. And so I think in the back of my mind, it was always like, okay, how can we become, you know, kind of like the Grand Valley State University of the PSAC, right? And I think we could have done that had we stayed D2. But as soon as we went D1, it was like, all right, this is the direction we're going. Everybody get on board because you can't revert, you know. And off the field, though, a lot of the coaches and staff kind of looked to me because we didn't have many D1 experienced coaches or players, right? Mm-hmm. And so having that background, a lot of times – you know, questions would be asked, and then they would just kind of, like, look over their shoulder, like, what do you think, Rich? And like, you're asking me, the women's soccer coach? Uh-huh. You know, so it was kind of interesting, but, it was a really unique experience for sure.
Well, awesome. This has been an amazing start to our conversation. That will take us to our first break. When we come back, we'll learn more about Coach Wall at Mercyhurst and then how he made it to Youngstown State, and we'll talk about this year's team when we come back on the Penguin Playbook Radio Show. Welcome back inside the Boardman Quaker Steak and Lube. Your hour number one of our Penguin Playbook radio show. Please be rejoined with Youngstown State women's soccer head coach Rich Wall. Before we get back into our talk with Coach Wall, I want to send along a message. The Penguins football team begins conference play on Saturday, October 4th, when they host South Dakota State at 6 p.m. It will be the YSU Family Day at Stambaugh Stadium, with all fans receiving a Penguin Stadium flag, courtesy of Panera, Medical Mutual, Pepsi, Varsity Club Youngstown, and 21 WFMJ. For tickets, call 330-941-1YSU or go to YSUsports.com. Please be rejoined with the head coach of the Youngstown State Women's Soccer Program, Coach Rich Wall. Coach, so we talked about kind of your upbringing in the sport of soccer, your playing career, the early parts of your coaching career, and then you make it to Youngstown State. But before we talk about you getting hired at Youngstown State, there's always a support system behind everyone. It looks like your family's in attendance here tonight for our radio show. Your wife, Jessica, your son, Trey, just how big of an impact do they play for you in that motivation for you to get up each day, even when you don't want to go into work, but you have people that you're working for?
So they're a huge influence on everything that we do. And honestly, we're at Youngstown State because of them. Mm-hmm. You know, Joe Spano, our athletic director at Mercier, basically said this is going to be a better opportunity and to pursue it. So appreciative of that. But, you know, when we were leaving Coastal Carolina, and I guess that was Thanksgiving 2022, I knew that I didn't want to be an assistant coach anymore after doing 4 years of being an assistant, and Trey was about a year and a half old at that point in time. And so finding the right head coaching opportunity, which ended up being Mercier's at the time, was best for our family. And then, you know, ultimately Joe pushing us to Youngstown State, you know, we're here because of them. So, yeah.
So we're in the ninth month, or you're in your ninth month here at Youngstown State. Officially, you were named the head coach January 2nd of 2025. I have to ask you, you know, coming from Mercyhurst, just on paper, what was it about Youngstown State University that made it a job that, I mean, you kind of talked about some of the reasons, but what was it about Youngstown State University that this was a job that you wanted to consider?
Yeah, so I think, like, we had our set of criteria as far as, you know, relocating for the right opportunity, and there were jobs that had come up a year earlier, and we didn't really push as hard as we could for them because we felt that Mercyhurst was still the best option for us at that time. Obviously things change, right? Mercier's yeah. going D1 and it not being the same job D2 as it was D1, definitely. To be completely honest. But then we just felt quality of life would be better. You know, as far as Youngstown State though, I mean, you know, Rebecca Fink, Ron Stroller, they did a great job of, hey, this is who we are. This is what we're about. And I'll be honest, like they hunted me down. And so that made it feel that much better, mm-hmm. right? That like, okay, I'm somebody that they could see leading this program. They're interested in me. And then as you do the research and you go through the process, I remember, you know, it was probably one of those things where even without the campus visit, we probably would have taken the chance just based on the conversations that we had had. But then when I came on the campus interview, I was kind of like, this is silly if I don't come.
Definitely. Well, we're glad to have you here.
I appreciate it.
So you start out in the spring. You start to build connections with the returning players, and you're having to go into the portal and high school and recruit people to Youngstown State. Early on during the off season, that spring in the off season, who were some of the players on this roster that really stuck out to you as vocal leaders off the field that you knew come fall, these are the people that I can have my players lean on?
Yeah, so I think, you know, just kind of sitting back and seeing what would happen, you know, the previous coach had named Taylor Berry and Emma Rigoni captains, and mm-hmm. As rising seniors, they did enough in my eyes to say, like, okay, there's not a change that needs to happen here. So been really pleased with them. But I think, you know, when you look at the entire senior class, you know, from Chloe, Mara, you know, I'm going to blank Marissa and Soph, you know, coming in as a transfer too, bringing different experiences. I think that entire group does a really good job of, you know, leading the team, whether it's verbally or by example. So, all of them stood out. And then, you know, we only had 14 healthy players in the spring. And so there was an opportunity to, really get to know all of them as players, and a little bit as people, as much as you can in 4 or 5 months. And, so I think, again, it was just a neat experience because, again, I didn't have the full coaching yeah. staff there, and it was just, you know, can't do 11v11 mm-hmm. in practice with 14 people. So you have to get a little creative, and you have to utilize everybody.
Definitely. So as we take a look at the season schedule now, we mentioned a little bit earlier, but very daunting non-conference schedule the Penguins face this year. The likes of Indiana, a Texas Tech team that's nationally ranked, Missouri, Michigan, a lot of Power Four teams that we traveled and want to play. From your standpoint, what were some of the biggest reasons that you wanted to challenge your team early on in the season? What did you think the team was going to gain from playing teams of those likes?
There's nothing to lose. That's mm-hmm. kind of the first part of the mindset. And you have to be able to go out and play in environments that make you uncomfortable if you want to grow. And I think if you look at how we've played from opening day Indiana to how we played against Michigan and then now even this past weekend against Milwaukee. You know, like we're a penalty kick away against Milwaukee this weekend, you know, in the 60th minute from, you know, probably feeling pretty good about it, you know, and we went to go make some changes to be aggressive in the last 10 minutes. And unfortunately, 10 seconds into making those changes, it kind of, it looks like it backfires, but it's like, well, we had to go chase the game, right? We're not going to play to lose 1-0. You know, and so penalty kick aside, you know, it changed the game, but it showed we could compete with the top dog in our conference. And so that's what the non-conference schedule was meant to do is, you know, test us so that we could be ready for the best of the best.
Yeah, so conference play starts last week in a thrilling 3-2 victory over Green Bay to kick off conference play last Thursday. From your standpoint, how important was it to start off conference play with a victory and you're already over 500 one game into conference play?
It was something we had not done as a program since 2012. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think anything else really needs to be said. Like that was, you know, it's historic in a sense that it hadn't been done in 13 years. So hopefully it's a tone setter for us. Green Bay is a team that beat us, I believe, 3-0 last year. So to beat them 3-2 on opening day was really good. And honestly, we probably could have scored more, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, probably could have been up 2-3-4-0 in the first half, and so we've got to do a little bit better there in converting chances, and then as they're chasing the game late, you know, when we're up by 2 goals, it obviously gets very defensive, but that bend don't break mentality, like we showed we can do it, and so you know, really happy to walk away with the win on opening night. I thought it was deserved, and you know, unfortunately we couldn't follow it up with the game against Milwaukee, but you know, these last 8 Horizon League games, I think it's anybody's game, and whoever wants it more is gonna ultimately probably walk away with it.
And we talk about Horizon League play. It's no success. We've mentioned it. You've had success at a lot of these programs that you've been at. So, and you know what it's like to play past your conference tournament. The Horizon League, usually year in, year out, is a one-bid league when it comes to the NCAA tournament. And not every school in the Horizon League qualifies for the conference tournament and qualifies for the postseason. Just how important are these regular season matches and even getting a draw compared to a loss when it comes to point totals that can not only get you in the conference tournament, but seeding is so important to give yourself those advantages against other teams?
Yeah, so obviously, like, as far as a goal is concerned, there's still 8 games. That's 24 points that are available for us. You know, and so we're going to try and track down as many of those as we can. Mm-hmm. You know, 15 to 16 points overall is typically what it takes to get into the tournament. So, you know, the goal of winning the league is still there. We're going to need help because Milwaukee's now 2-0 and, you know, 36, 37 games regular season and tournament unbeaten.
Crazy.
So, you know, I hope they go 10-0 and then we get them in the conference tournament and we're the ones to knock them off. You know, so hopefully nobody else gets that chance before we do. But I think the biggest thing is if they were to run the table, let's say, you know, there's still a lot to play for. Second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth to get into the tournament. Because once you're in tournament play, it's knockout one game at a time, and anything can happen.
Definitely. And we've talked about a little bit that Milwaukee match yesterday. And you mentioned it, very strong Milwaukee team. They played a lot of Power 4 teams. They competed with a lot of those Power 4 teams. It was a 2-0 defeat yesterday, but like you mentioned, it was a 0-0 up until the 60th minute. And then one thing goes Milwaukee's way on, I believe it was a handball. They get the penalty kick. They score. But for the most part, I felt that we defended very well. We kind of played keep away a little bit. We tried to keep them from our goal getting close to it. What were some of your good takeaways in a 2-0 defeat yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, you go back and you watch the film as we did today, like, and it's not bad, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the things that we worked on from just even Green Bay to Milwaukee. Milwaukee's a significantly stronger attacking team, and they had fewer chances, right, than we had given up the previous game. And so we did a much better job at just general defending, and then in you know, truth, defending closer to our own goal as well. You know, the handball is a byproduct of a shot from distance that we block. Yeah. We just, unfortunately, it hits a hand, but you know, that's part of the game, unfortunately. And I hate the handball rule, but
yeah,
you know, maybe it'll come back to favor us later this season, hopefully. But, I think there's a lot more positives. I told the team after the game, like, I'm not disappointed in the result because I thought we did play, a strong game, and I think, again, Milwaukee was a team that beat us 4-0 a year ago. So to be able to walk off the field, and it's a penalty kick and a counterattack, and that's the difference in the game, it's tough, but we'll have eight more chances to hopefully rectify it.
And one of those eight chances coming up is on the road at Cleveland State on this Thursday coming up. Obviously, travel-wise, the most favorable stretch that the program has had so far this season. We had two home matches, and then we're going to do a day trip, basically, to Cleveland State back home, and then we're back home next Sunday against Detroit Mercy. Just first things first, what do you know about the Vikings just yet? And from a coaching perspective, how does the lead up to a match go for you when it comes to looking at film and kind of looking at tendencies that the other team does?
Yeah, so we've been able to watch them a little bit already. You know, they played Duquesne earlier in the season, so we kind of pulled up that game, Duquesne and Cleveland State, as we were preparing for Duquesne. So we got an early look at them that way. You know, and then earlier today I had pulled up their game against Detroit because they've already played each other. So to be able to watch, hey, these are our next two opponents and they're, you know, going head to head, that makes it a lot easier
too.
Kill
two birds with one stone.
Exactly. So, you know, they'll be good. They'll be challenging. Their coach is in his second year as well. And so he's got a little bit of a, you know, a head start in terms of, you know, implementing what he wants to do and how his team plays. But, I genuinely think that if we play the way we can and are capable of, I think that we should be the favorites going into these last eight games. Now we just have to go out and play that way, right? And I think that's a big change for this program too. So hopefully the players all believe that they can go in and win these games. And like I said, it's a matter of execution at that point.
Yeah, and then one final thing. You know, it's a great way to segue into this one. We're talking about scout. We're talking about preparing for teams. You're not a one-man crew here at Youngstown State. You have a coaching staff behind you, assistants that help you on a daily basis. Just before we let you go, just talk about your staff and how they help you run this program on a daily basis.
Yeah, so the coaching staff, obviously, Coach McKelley, he is a goalkeeper by trade. So he's the one that puts Maya through goalkeeper training sessions on the daily basis. But he's great at what he does, and I've worked with him previously on the men's side. You know, and then Coach Avery and Coach Taryn, they are former players that have played under me in some capacity. I had Avery for one semester at Ball State before I left for Cincinnati, and then I had Taryn for her grad year at Mercyhurst. And so there's a familiarity there, and I think one of the nice things on the field, we balance each other really well. You know, Mike was a goalkeeper, Taryn was a center back, Avery was a center forward, and I was a midfielder. So positionally, there's really good balance amongst the four of us. You know, and then from just general administrative tasks, we've got our kind of roles and responsibilities of oversight. And so they do a great job. I think, you know, everybody that they work with, from the business office to travel to equipment, I think they're really well liked. And I think our players also enjoy being around them. And then also shout out to our support staff. You know, I think Brian Welsh does a great job with the academics. Jill and Bailey are doing a great job in athletic training. Connor and Mary Beth in the strength department. You know, and again, Tim and equipment and Tracy with travel. So everybody's doing a great job, and it takes everybody. So.
Awesome. Well, Coach, thanks for taking the time to join me. The Penguins will be on the road this Thursday at Cleveland State before returning home this upcoming Sunday for a Horizon League matchup against Detroit Mercy, 1 p.m. at Farmers National Bank Field. We'd love to see all of Penguin Nation out there supporting. Coach, thanks for taking the time to join me.
Thank you. Go Gwens.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll speak with some members of the Youngstown State women's soccer program on the playing side when we return on the Penguin Playbook radio show.